It's Nolan and Nolan bringing you the PP3 podcast.
Welcome, everybody, to episode 19 in the season 2 opening episode of the PP3 podcast. Thank you all for tuning into a jam-packed show where the boys go over all of our summer festivities, a revamped NHL Eastern Conference, the first 2 weeks of visors being back in the jungle, and a very, very exciting interview with NHL top prospect and British Columbia boy, Logan Stankoven. But first off, Nolo, what is going on, dude? How good does it feel to be back?
If you heard that, I'm cheers into that, boys. Holy shit, it's good to be back. It's been a long time coming. Season 2, off and running. As you guys see on our Instagram and all our social medias, we landed a big one, boys. And it's a good way to get the season going. I can't tell you how excited I am to be back and doing this with you, man. It's been a long but awesome summer. I'm super stoked to get this going, man. How's your summer been?
Fucking awesome, man. What a summer it was. I went to Italy for 2 weeks. That was sweet. And then just worked. Little bit of school mixed in there with some summer classes. Other than that, just so excited for hockey to be back. Training camp's on the way. You've seen all the videos from the new boys. Seen Stammer in Nashville, DeBrusque cooking with Petey at Vancouver camp. It's an exciting time of the year, and we already teased our guest a little. Like you said, Logan Stankoven, top prospect in the NHL. What a joy he was to be on. He's going to be on a little bit later, so you guys will be tuning into that. You guys are going to absolutely love that. A great conversation with Stank. Nolo, how's your summer
been? Man, it was unreal. You guys know from the earlier episodes, I was out fishing all summer out in Gold River, but man, is it good to be back on land and back at 2040 Grunge Street. It's good to be back living with my good buddy Evan Dice. But yeah, man, finding groove, getting back into school. But yeah.
How's the first 2 weeks of school going?
Oh, you know how they go. Bend you over. Like usual. Yeah, I got 4 classes. I'm in the education program. I'm going to be a teacher, if you guys can believe that. But yeah, man, I'm a little bit more dialed this year.
What are you going to teach?
I don't know. Probably PE. I don't know. I'm just really excited for parent-teacher conferences. See all the moms, if you know what I'm talking about. But yeah, man, school's good. It's nice to be back in kind of a routine. I need to do some reading tonight. I think I need to do 173 pages of my English book tonight. So that'll be good. Big exam on Thursday. But yeah, man, back in the swing of things. But nobody wants to hear about school. Nobody wants to hear about work all summer. They want to hear about the NHL. And that's what we're here to give you guys. And looking at all the new faces and new places, just an absolute shuffle on the league this year, man. I'm so excited to get into it. We're going to be bringing to you guys this year our Eastern Conference predictions and just some hot topics around the NHL just to kind of get things warmed up before the season kicks off. But, man, I'm shaking. I'm stoked. Hockey's back. Football's back. Like, what more can you ask for?
Yeah, and hockey's back in the VI, and the Oceanside Generals had a big night, second home game of the year. They were honoring Dan Lemon, absolute G of a coach, and a bunch of the old Jenny's boys showed up, like 4 generations worth of Jen's boys. Like, it was an absolute time. And if you guys were on our social media looking at her stories, Noel had a little bit of a Saturday night, maybe the most fucked up I've seen you in a long, long time. Like, You were on another level. I've never seen you that shit-faced before.
Yeah, I almost needed crutches out of the meeker, man. It was a bit frightening, but you got to go hard or go home for Dan Lemon night. And like you touched on, man, 4 generations of Generals there, about 30, 35 alumni, I'd say, ballpark. And just goes to show what kind of a coach he was and how much of a beauty he was for all of us and kind of what an impact he had on our hockey and our junior hockey time. As you saw the sign on the wall, coach changed my life. I don't know if I'd go that far, but he sure as hell made it a lot more fun in junior hockey. And yeah, you got to go hard on Lem's night. It was an unreal time with all the boys in the building. Too bad the boys couldn't get it done up in Oceanside. But yeah, looking at the VI, dude, and the visors, it looks like a different league out there.
It does.
It's kind of crazy.
Yeah.
We came back a year too late, eh?
I know. It's crazy. We're going to touch on this a little bit after the Stank interview. But before we head over to the NHL, just to kind of, for some people that maybe forgot about how exciting of an NHL year this is going to be, the new faces in the league, right? We got Macklin Celebrini, Will Smith on the Sharks. It's going to be exciting to see what they do there. Askarov, too, that they just got, up-and-coming goaltender. That's going to be a really exciting team to watch. Utah Hockey Club. Like, how's Utah going to embrace their team, right? The fan base. Like, that's going to be a really cool scene there. And then the big one, international hockey, back in the NHL. You got four nations face off: Canada, USA, Finland, Sweden, all playing in Montreal around, I think it's January they play. So that's that best of the best hockey. That's what everybody's been looking for.
People have been itching like dice for years for this to be back, and I'm stoked.
Itchy.
Yeah, Canada, USA, Finland, Sweden all playing in Montreal. It's going to be a sight to see. Obviously, no Russia. We know why, but those four nations right there, man, it says it in the name, the four nations face off. It's going to be cinematic, and I can't wait. The best of the best. What more can you ask for? I'm thrilled to see that. I hope it sticks around, too.
I hope so, too. At least I hope something. Eventually, Russia's going to get back in.
Yeah,
and you need Russia in the best on best. But, yeah, and then also you're looking at the Leafs core four with Craig Berube. Is this going to be the final year of the Leafs? Who knows? We're going to see. I'm expecting a big year out of Mitch Marner. I've been talking to you about this. It's his final year of his contract. I think that whole group knows that it's do or die. I hate the Leafs to my guts, but I'm rooting for Mitch Marner this year just because of all the backlash he got last year in the playoffs, and he deserved it for sure. But that's going to be exciting to see there. Sabres as well, making a big trade, trading away Matt Savoy, their top prospect, for Ryan McLeod. A little bit of a head-scratcher there. They're on a 13-year playoff drought right now. So are they going to be able to break that? Who knows? Also, Ovi, 43 goals away from Gretzky's goal record. I mean, I can't see him scoring 40 this year, but maybe 30, maybe 25, get within the range for next year. I think that's definitely doable there. McDavid as well, only 16 points off of 1,000 points. That's crazy. And then the big story with Edmonton, they're the favorites heading into this year. Are they going to be able to get back to the finals, or does Florida have what it takes to go back-to-back? All the headlines heading into this year, and I mean, if you're not excited just hearing those couple little bits there, never mind the Canucks, right? The local team adding DeBrusk, Jonathan Lekker-Mackey's looking great. It's a super, super exciting year for hockey, and your Philly boys.
I know. We're all over the place right now, jumping from team to team, but there's just so much going on in the NHL this offseason. I'm thrilled. Like, we're super excited to be able to bring it all to you guys, hopefully every week again. And yeah, man, there's lots of storylines that we can't wait to dive into. Like we said, we're going to start with the Eastern Conference this year, but
so do you want to go over predictions right now?
Yeah, let's hop into it. I know there's lots of stories we got to cover after that, but we might as well go into it with the Eastern Conference. I mean, Eastern Conference looks like an absolute powerhouse. You and I sat down and talked about it today at work. It's just loaded. Talent top to bottom in the division. I mean, maybe not at the bottom with Columbus there, but like, it's a dogfight for the top in each division. It's going to be electric hockey this year, man. I'm super excited to see how these teams shake out. There's a lot of expectations around the league this year with teams such as Detroit, teams such as Florida. I mean, Ottawa and Montreal are poised to have huge years. They're young guys. They need to step up, and they're going to have a big year. They're going to be a big story to follow this year. Pittsburgh, they're another one that I'm excited to see, especially after seeing Sid the Kid ink that 8x7. What a fucking beauty move by that guy.
8.7 times 2 years? Yeah, it's... I mean, that's just him, though, right? Like, he's a legend of the game, and I don't think you can have any disrespect towards that guy. What he's done for the game, the way he holds himself, humble as can be. Just a great guy there. And I mean, we're talking about overrated teams, sleeper teams. There's a lot of teams that are kind of have that boom or bust potential in this year, like Buffalo, right? You look at what they did 2 years ago, just the players being able to step up. Dylan Cousins, Tage Thompson, those are two players that are absolutely crucial for those teams. And they didn't step it up last year. To be honest, they didn't really play very good.
Yeah.
So, I mean, you're looking at that team there, 13 years not making playoffs. Everybody has high hopes for them. Rasmus Dahlin, he's one of my favorites for the Norris this year. So, I mean, we'll see if Devin Levi as well can take over the crease. I know Uka Pekalukinen played pretty well last year. That's same thing that goes with Pittsburgh, I think, with that kind of boomer bust potential. You got Sid, you got Gino, you got Eric Carlson, Chris Letang. You got the decor, you got most of the forwards, right? And now you're looking at the age, right? If you said that team 6-7 years ago, you'd be like, they're right up there for the Stanley Cup. Now you're looking, they're close to their 40s. Do they have the legs for it to go full 82-game season? That'll be super interesting there. And then, like you said, like with Ottawa, I love Ottawa. I love their team that they've put. They have all the pieces in there now. They got the goaltending. They got the decor. They got the forwards. Coaching might be a little bit iffy. I'm not 100% sure about that Travis Green signing, but they got all the pieces there. There's absolutely no excuses for that team. So, I mean, to think about only eight of the teams in the Eastern Conference are going to make playoffs, it's crazy. You could have a whole nother playoffs with the other eight teams.
It's crazy, man. There's 10 teams out of the East alone that should be in the playoffs, just looking at them on paper. But we know that's not how it shakes out. There's no top 16. It's the divisions. And I don't know, people have had some debate of if they want the top 16 or if they want to keep it the way it is. But the way it is right now, man, there's going to be some really good teams that aren't going to make the playoffs this year. So like we said, we're setting up for a dogfight of a season already. 82 games of just unbelievable action. I can't wait, man.
One story I like in the NHL, before we get on to the Eastern Conference predictions, it's the only team in the NHL to do this, is the Anaheim Ducks. They made all their games available for free on their website. It's going to have all the broadcasts on, every single game live. I think that's a really cool thing. I just wanted to throw that out there. I think that kind of went under the radar of a lot of people. I think if you're trying to grow the game, like the NHL is trying to market the game more, I think that's a great way to do it. Make more games accessible for people, because people buy the fucking Rogers Game Pass or whatever the fuck it is, and half the games don't even work. You get blackouts on most of them. Make the games available for people to watch. You want to grow the game? It's little stuff like that. Make the games easy to watch. That's how you get people into the game.
Yeah.
So
I'm sick of battling ads on streamies. Yeah. Not that I'd be doing it to throw on a Ducks game. Although... big news in Anaheim out of today.
Radko Gudas.
Radko, the goat, man. Big C on his jersey, left side heavy. Who would have thought that guy would be walking into the NHL with a C on his jersey?
Me and Trey Boylan's favorite player in the NHL. We already got a Panthers jersey of him. I might need to get a new Radko jersey, especially those Mighty Ducks ones.
Yeah, how about those jerseys?
Those are nasty. Would you get? Do you like the bright orange?
I love them, man. You and I have talked about it since they dropped. I'm a huge fan of them. I mean, I've loved orange jerseys. I'm a Flyers fan. I grew up playing for the Tyees. That was always my color, and I was obsessed. And this bright orange with the kind of throwback look is just so clean. I love the letters, the captains and the A's. I love the numbers on the side. They just look so good, and I'm curious to see if Anaheim can kind of put a team in them this year that kind of, I know, they're giving games away for free, but hopefully they can put a team out on the ice that can perform and kind of, I don't know, just improve a little bit. They got a lot to do, but yeah, with Radko at the helm, I'm sure they're ready to rock.
Do you think they'll have you seen their maroon third jerseys that
yes.
Do you think they'll keep those,
or I
do you
hope
think
so.
They'll do something with the original logo?
I'm a huge fan of those maroon ones. Yeah, I think Anaheim's got some of the nicer jerseys in the league right now, with the updated ones. Anyways, those are super clean. I hope they stick around.
So I think it had our last episode, our season one finale. I don't think we got it. We weren't able to go over the Utah jerseys.
No, they haven't came out until recent.
Yeah. So what's your thoughts on those? We already know, we don't like the name Utah Hockey Club. Fucking sucks. Mm-hmm. There's no kind of story behind it. There's nothing cool for fans to engage with. But what's your thoughts on the jerseys?
The jerseys themselves are nice, man. I mean, the Utah, we need a logo. We need a name. We've said this for months now. But as far as color scheme and gear looks, they look really good on ice with their full colors. You see the pictures of them out there and like kind of the teasers. They look really clean. The color scheme's unreal, and that's kind of what you need. And I'm a huge fan of the color scheme. Just need a team name and a logo. And I don't know if you caught it, but Clayton Keller let it slip that it sounds like it might be the Yetis, which is pretty cool. And I think that if the Utah Yeti take the ice with those color scheme, man, and kind of getting like a Kootenay ice kind of vibe. Yeah. I really like it. I'm a huge fan of it. And I don't know, man, especially if they can have a team, like a competitive team. I'm super excited to see, like, they made some moves in the off season that make them kind of a, I don't know, I wouldn't say a contender, but they're no rollover team. Like,
they're not going to be at the bottom. It's not points night for sure.
At Utah, it's not. Like, they're going to put a good team on the ice every night, and I'm excited to see what they can do. And like you touched on right at the beginning, it's all a matter of if they can put the fans and if they have the following that Arizona kind of lacked. I'm super excited. That's another storyline we'll be following.
I'm a huge fan of Logan Cooley as well. I've always been on Logan Cooley since he got into the league.
Logan Cooley, Clayton Keller, Dylan Gunther.
Talking about him.
Yeah, why not?
8 years, $7 million a year. Dylan Gunther signed a ticket today. We're recording Friday night here at 2040 Grunge Street. Big signing there. I think that's an absolute steal for that franchise. You get a franchise sniper. I mean, he's got that clutch gene. Scores the game-winning goal for Canada in the World Junior Championship, which we talk about with Stank in the interview. I think he's an absolute baller. I think that's an absolute steal for that franchise. What do you think?
I agree, and I think with the cap supposed to rise in the near future, if he kind of keeps trending upwards the way he has been, and just turns into the player everybody expects him to be, I think that's a great ticket for him.
I think he's gonna pot 35 goals this year.
That's a hot take.
I think he's gonna pot 35.
That 35 in the NHL as a young guy. Wow. That's ballsy.
He popped 20 last year in like 55 games or 60 games.
It's true. He's a shooter, man. I'm excited to see. They got a better team around him this year. A little bit of rejuvenation up in Utah. We'll see, man. Like, sure. Yeah, we'll see.
Was there any other storylines you want to talk about before we head over to the Eastern Conference?
Oh, we didn't really talk much about the Sharks.
Okay. Yeah. We can talk about the Sharks a little
bit. Before we jump into the East, let's talk about their two young guns and kind of the load-ups they've made this offseason. Biggest name in the draft, Macklin Celebrini. This kid's an absolute hound. A 200-foot player. This guy works up and down the ice. He plays his role so well. My first time seeing him was in the World Juniors this year, and he's the youngest guy out there, the only guy in a cage. And he was making some of the men out there look like boys. And when you can do that at a stage like that, it's just impressive. And I think that's something, if you can dominate in that, I think usually that's going to translate to some success in professional hockey. I have no doubt that Macklin Celebrini is going to turn out into the player that everybody expects him to be. And to give him kind of that, give him, like, he's going into a team that doesn't really have a franchise player. He doesn't really have a face. And now look at him. First overall draft pick. The Sharks needed that bad. And they bring in a stud like Celebrini, kind of a generational talent. They've lacked that. And I think him and Will Smith especially, they're going to be drawing some fans. They're not going to be the San Jose Sharks that are getting shelled double digits back-to-back nights like last year. Yeah, remember that?
It was just embarrassing.
Getting smoked by what?
I think it was Vancouver and
then Pittsburgh the next night.
Pittsburgh of all teams. Holy
just goes
shit.
To show. And that leads me to my next thing. I don't think the Sharks this year are going to be another rollover points night team. Sure, they might get smoked. Sure, they might not make the playoffs. Sure, they're going to be in the basement. But I think they're going to be icing a better team. And I think they're going to be putting up more competitive games. Like, it's going to be a different San Jose Sharks team than we saw last year, especially with some other offseason additions like Tyler Toffoli.
That's a big one.
Huge. That guy knows how to win. He's been all over. Sure, but he's got a Stanley Cup, and not many guys on San Jose can say they got one of those. So I think having him in the locker room and on the ice, just kind of a veteran presence for those young guys that need kind of the molding, I think Toffoli's that guy. He's a great leader. I'm excited to see what he does. I assume he'll kind of take a first-line role.
Yeah, projected lines right now, William Eklund, Macklin Celebrini, Tyler Toffoli, Eklund. That's another player that he was slotted in at center last year, kind of struggled under the center position. So he's projected in training camp to be on the wing with Macklin Celebrini up center. So that's going to be a really exciting line.
And
right there.
Eklund's no joke. That guy can stick handle in a phone booth. Like, he's unreal. I'm excited to see with some more talent up front. I think he's going to really up his output on points, goals. He's going to be all over the ice. and like you touched on at the beginning, Askarov coming over from Nashville, a goalie of that caliber in the AHL. He was lights out with the Milwaukee Admirals in the A, which is Nashville's farm team, obviously. And there was just no room for him in Nashville. And it seemed like he wanted out, and here we are. And he's getting what he wants, man. He's getting the rubber. He's going to be facing 30, 40 shots a night in San Jose. And as a young goaltender that's trying to prove yourself, do you think that's a good thing or a bad thing?
I think it's a, I mean, anytime you can get more ice time, I think that's a good thing. Obviously, Nashville has their own way of developing goalies. You look at UC Saros, he didn't get normal starting goalie playing time till maybe the age of like 25, because he was playing behind Pekka Rinne. And for anybody that watched Pekka Rinne in his prime, that guy was a top three, top four goalie in the NHL. So obviously they got their way of how they want to develop goalies. I'm assuming they had the same vision for Askarov, but I mean, you're looking at a lot of players now. You look at Cutter Gauthier, you look at Askarov, all these young guys, they're like, Adam Fox before, when he demanded a trade out of Calgary, went to the Rangers. Like, they kind of picked their own future now, and that's not something that you could say 10, 15 years ago, right? Players, you look at entry-level deals, guys are getting like $8 million out of their entry level, where you never saw that before. People had to work for that money. They had to be consistent for a number of years. Also, Rutter McGroarty, that's a big one. That was a massive one this offseason, him going to Pittsburgh from Winnipeg. And what Winnipeg got, Brendan Jagr?
Yeah, Braden Jagr, and who's also a game breaker.
He's sick.
They're
sick,
both unreal, but like you touched on, it's crazy. That's not something you really see unless you are the man. I mean, there's guys that, like, in the past, like Eric Lindros, who refused to be drafted by, who was it, Quebec?
I forget. I don't know.
Whatever it was. Like, sometimes it's not common, especially not in the history of hockey, for guys that haven't even proven themselves in the NHL to demand trades or to ask out. And we see it this year, Cutter Gauthier demanding out of Philadelphia for whatever reason. Still not a fan of you, bud. I think you're going to do great things, but I can't believe you didn't want to do it in the orange and white, and I'm pretty pissed off. But yeah, like, you don't see young guys going around, but it's starting a trend in the NHL, especially with these young guys. They know their worth. Their agents are pushy now, and guys are going where they want to go, or they're going back to college. And it's crazy. They kind of have the teams by the balls, these, it seems, lately.
Yeah, and just to quickly touch on the Sharks, talking about Celebrini's line there, that first line, second line, Will Smith's going to be slotted in as the second line center. Then you got Mikael Granlund on the left wing. He had 50-something assists last year. And Fabian Zetterlund, who's, I think he's 25, 26.
Good. He's a parlay killer. He can shoot the puck.
So those are two guys. They're not going to be stranded out there, right? You look at, I mean, we're big NFL fans. We've been doing a couple Sunday grunges here at 2040. And one player that comes to mind with me is, you look at Bryce Young and you look at Caleb Williams. Those guys have no help on their O-line. Those guys get stranded out there, right? They get snapped the ball and they got these big 300-pound D linemen coming at them.
Don't even get a chance.
2 seconds, right? So, I mean, maybe a little bit of a weird comparison there, but these guys aren't going to be stranded. They have some talent around them to make some plays and have some help. I love the Toffoli signing for the franchise. Not sure what Toffoli was thinking. As a 32, 33-year-old going to San Jose, right? Unless he's thinking of maybe getting a trade at the trade deadline. But for that franchise, it's important to bring in some vets on that team to really, I guess, mentor the young guys. And yeah, it's gonna be really exciting to see how Celebrini and Will Smith does. Yeah, I'm really, really excited. Anything else you want to talk
just
about?
Just one more thing on the Sharks. Cody Ceci, Jake Walman, Mario Ferraro. They've got three NHL D-men that they didn't have last year.
Yeah.
Like, a lot more solid on the back end, and that's going to make a hell of a difference too, especially for Askarov in net. Like I said, Sharks aren't going to be a contender by any means this year or in the near future, but with the pieces they have and kind of the development they're looking at, I'm excited to see what they have, because Sharks are a fun team to watch. I remember their playoff series back against the Canucks, back when the Canucks were going on the runs. They're always exciting, and San Jose can pack a building. It's a cool place to play, so it'd be unreal to see if they can start putting a team together that's a contender. Like, I think we're kind of in that weird era of hockey where teams are starting to swing up and swing down. Like, there's going to be a lot of changes in the NHL, a lot of top dogs that aren't the same anymore, and a lot of top dogs in the NHL that are kind of falling off, and some new teams that are coming up. It's going to be neat to see here.
Yeah, moving along to the Eastern Conference now. So we're going to go over the Eastern Conference predictions this week. Next week, we're going to go over the Western Conference. So I'm going to start off here with the Atlantic Division. A lot of boom or bust teams, like I talked about before. There's a lot of exciting teams here, like the Canadiens, Ottawa, Detroit, Buffalo. One of those four teams is most likely going to make playoffs. So for that franchise, whichever franchise that is a huge momentum swing for even next year, if you're thinking ahead, right? Making playoffs, getting that experience. All those teams have young guys that are on everybody's radar, right? You look at Montreal, obviously Kirby Dach, Nick Suzuki, Cole Caulfield, Patrick Laine, Kane Gooley. You got some top studs there. Demidoff's going to be coming over hopefully next year. Ottawa, you got Brady Tkachuk, you got Josh Norris, Drake Batherson, Stutzla. Thomas Chabot, Tim Stützle. Detroit, you got Lucas Raymond, Dylan Larkin, Patrick Kane, D-Man, Mort Snyder. Who's the other D-man there? They got another top stud there. They got a bunch of studs on that team. And then Buffalo, obviously, Tage Thompson, Peyton Krebs, Rasmus Dahlin. All these teams have top-end talent, and one of them has to make playoffs. So, with that being said, here are my 2024 power rankings for the Atlantic Division. Number one, I got the Toronto Maple Leafs finishing first.
After you just
I do not like Toronto, but I really like what they did to their decor this year. I think adding Chris Tanev, Oliver Ekman-Larsson, especially Chris Tanev with Morgan Riley, I think that's a really important move there. It's going to be, I think their forward core did take a hit a little bit. It's going to be really interesting to see how Matty Nyes does with Poppy and probably Marner on the wing there. So I like their team on paper. I'm not saying I like their franchise, but I think it's exciting. It's going to be a very exciting team for that franchise. First year with Craig Berube, I think he's going to get them playing a physical style of game. They
what
added
do you mean?
Some weight.
You think they're going to get Marner throwing checks? Do you think?
I think Marner. Yes,
shit he took?
Yes, yes. So my point with I think Marner's going to put up a 100-point year this year.
Here we go.
I think we're going to see a different Marner. He's the type of guy. If you watch any interviews with him or the way he handles himself, that guy. So yeah, he had a shitty playoffs, right? And he knows that. And there is pictures circulating midway through the summer of him, Craig Berube, I think out for coffee or at a restaurant or something. So they've already had their discussions. Marner knows what's expected of him here. I think Craig Berube is going to get him playing a hard game. He's telling him, you got disrespected the fuck out of in playoffs. We got to change that. You're a great player. You got all the skill. You got to add that gritty element to that game. And I think Marner's going to do that. So I really like Marner.
Unfortunately, I got to disagree with you, man. I know you've been high on Marner and high on his futures this year. Like, you've been all Marner all summer, which is crazy from you as a Leafs hater. But I don't see a player like that being able to change his game into kind of a guy that, I don't know, he's a spectacular regular season player. He's filled with skill. He can make anything happen at any time. But when it comes to playoffs and you're facing up against the Bruins or teams like that, man, he just gets shut down. He becomes a ghost out there. And I don't know that a new coach or like a little talk in a coffee shop is going to wake him up enough unless he puts on like 20 pounds and gets ready to lay some hits. I don't think that he is going to be able to change his game in the playoff enough to get the Leafs to where they want to be.
Okay, well, I think he is.
Okay.
So we'll see. We'll see how
talk
that goes.
About this come whatever, April.
Episode 30 or whatever yeah. The fuck it'll be. Okay, going on. Number two, I got the Florida Panthers coming off of Stanley Cup. I think that momentum there, I know they lost a lot of big players, but I just think you build that culture. You look at the Bruins constantly making playoffs, constantly being a good team. Once you get that culture and know what's expected of you, I think it's just it goes down the pecking order, and you look at Tkachuk, you look at Barkov, those are players that are going to be telling their new teammates, this is how we do things. This is how we run things. So I think that's it's a no-brainer that they're going to be in the top of the Eastern Conference. Number three, I got the Boston Bruins. I think the Bees adding Zadorov, adding Lindholm. I like those signings there, especially Zadorov. Big body.
He's a Bruins prototype.
He is a Bruins prototype. I think that fan base is going to embrace him. I think they already love him. He showed some offensive upside last year, which we haven't seen at all through his career. So it'll be interesting to see if that's going to be able to sustain. And then you know what David Pastrnak can do. He's a 40-goal scorer, 50-goal scorer. He's going to get 100 points this year. They got the skill. Brad Marchand, it's going to be interesting to see how he does. He's getting up there in age as well. So I really like that team, though. I think they got the culture, just like with the Florida Panthers. I think they're going to be an easy slot for the playoffs. And then number four, I got the Tampa Bay Lightning. Number five, I got the Montreal Canadiens. Number six, Ottawa Senators. Number seven, Detroit Red Wings. And number eight, Buffalo Sabres. And I'll wait to talk about Tampa Bay and Montreal until I give my Metro predictions. So over to the Metro now. Number one, I got the New York Rangers. I think they're going to have a big year this year again. I keep saying I don't know if they're going to do it in playoffs. I really like Panarin. I've always really liked him. I love Lafreniere. I think he's going to get 70 points this year.
And I like that
be a big player on that team. I think he just had a slow development into the NHL, and I think last year in the playoffs you really saw the type of player that he's going to be able
probably
to be. Vincent Trocheck as well, he really turned it up in the playoffs last year. He's probably going to be their number one center.
Not to mention sliding in on the right wing on the second line coming over from Vegas, Riley Smith,
Pittsburgh
speed demon. Pittsburgh. Okay, well, I always play with him on Vegas on Shell 21. I guess I'm behind the times. But Riley Smith, man, he's fast. He can play second line there with Zibanejad and Kreider. He's going to bang in some big goals for them this year, and I think he's kind of a role guy, like a skilled role guy that can kind of change a culture. He knows how to win. I'm excited to see what he can do on that team. It's kind of a fresh start, kind of a little reboot for him, and I think he's the type of player that's going to take that opportunity and kind of run with it. So I like it. I like the Rangers.
The big question mark I have with that team is Kaapo Kakko. I've always liked him. If you watch Rangers games, you see the little bits of skill that he has. You can tell that he was a top-end draft pick. It's just he hasn't been able to put the finishing pieces in. He always shows flares of things, but he's not able to make that one extra pass or get that puck on net or the little things like that. So it's gonna be really interesting to see what happens with him. I think if he can get 50 points this year, be around that 40-50 point range, half a point per game, I think that's all they need him to be, slot into that third line like a middle six winger. I think that's exactly what they need him to be.
I think he needs another year or two, but it could be another Lafreniere situation. Hopefully, everybody wrote him off the same way. And Kaapo Kakko, as you just mentioned, he showed the top end flair, and it's just a matter of kind of bringing the rest of his game up to the NHL level. Like when he has the puck on his stick, he makes things happen sometimes. And I think he just needs to get a little bit faster, a little bit smarter. And once he gets kind of a little bit more used to it, like a little bit more reps, he's going to become the player I hope that the Rangers were hoping for.
And my number two in the Metro, I got the New Jersey Devils. I think they're going to be on a big year. I love Jack Hughes. I placed a bet on him last year to win the Hart MVP of the league. I think he's going to be bound for a big year this year. I love his skill. I love what he brings to the table. He's a skill player. He's got that fuck you in his game. Not a big player, but plays on the edge a little bit. I love the way he handles media as well. It's so funny watching him tell media members to basically fuck off and that their questions are stupid. So I think that's hilarious. And Brett Pesce coming over as well. That's a big signing for their D-core. Their D-core really struggled with injuries last year. Dougie Hamilton, their number one D-man, he missed the majority of last year. Kind of forced Luke Hughes to go in when he wasn't really ready, I'd say, for the amount of minutes and that amount of responsibility. So a fully healthy Devils team heading into this year, I think it's going to be really exciting. Also, Jacob Markstrom, you finally get your number one goalie. That's huge. That's going to be really interesting to watch. I think they're going to be a really fun team.
Just a matter if he can string together kind of the caliber of Jacob Markstrom we used to see. He needs to have a big year.
Agreed. Number three, I got the Carolina Hurricanes. Yeah, they lost some big pieces this year, but they still got a lot of good players. You look at Seth Jarvis, right? Like the way he was able to elevate his game last year. Obviously sucks not being able to keep Jake Guentzel. That's a big piece lost. But I like Rod the Bod, good CR boy. He's got that team well-oiled, so I think they're going to be right there in the playoffs. And number four, just missing, I got the New York Islanders. I think they're going to be in there. They're not a team that's exciting. They are a snooze fest, but they got the goaltending. They got Matty Barzell, Bo Horvat. They got their team the way that Lou wants teams to be built defensively. Not so much offensive flair. I like the Anthony Duclair signing this year. I think he'll slot in as a good second line winger. Other than that, though, there's not much going on there. Noah Dobson really showed out last year. We'll see what he's able to do this year. But yeah, just not a super exciting team. And then number five, I got your Philly Flyers. I got them missing the playoffs as well, along with number six, the Washington Capitals. They made some big moves this summer. Pierre-Luc Dubois, Logan Thompson, Andrew Mangiapane. They bring over Jacob Chychrun as well, make some big plays. I just don't think it's there. I think they're a boomer bust team as well, and I just don't see them making playoffs. And then number seven, Pittsburgh Penguins. They're not a team that excites me at all. They added Kevin Hayes this summer, who, yeah, he's a beauty. Like, I love Kevin Hayes, but is that really what you're adding? Like, a veteran center, another vet? Like, it's crazy how old that team is.
He's going there to crush beers with Sid.
Yeah, I don't think, yeah, he just doesn't have the, I don't think that team has the legs to compete for 82 games anymore. So I got them finishing seventh. And then number eight, Columbus Blue Jackets. I think they're visibly, at least on paper, the least talented team in the Eastern Conference. So there's that. And then a quick little recap. I got Toronto finishing first, Toronto finishing first, the New York Rangers finishing second, New Jersey Devils finishing third, Florida Panthers finishing fourth, Carolina Hurricanes in fifth, Boston Bruins in sixth. And then, like I mentioned, I was going to go back to the Tampa Bay Lightning and the Montreal Canadiens. I got Tampa Bay slotting in at the number seven slot in the Eastern Conference. And I got the Montreal fucking Canadiens making the playoffs. First time since COVID. I think they're going to slot in at that second wildcard team. I think I love this team. I absolutely love them. Goaltending's the big question mark with them. Montembeau. I don't think he's a number one on most teams, at least most playoff teams in the NHL. But I mean, other than I think there's so much excitement around that team. Look at all the young talent they have. Like, you look at their top six right now. You got Nick Suzuki, Cole Caulfield, Kirby Dach, Alex Newhook, Patrick Laine. Who else is on? Slapkowski. Like, those, that top six alone is so exciting. Everybody's under the age of 26. It's exciting times for Montreal, and I think they're going to be able to pull it together with Marty St. Louis and make the playoffs.
Not to mention Lane Hutson.
Yes. That's a big deal there. Him and Kane Gooley. David Sabard, he's a lockdown right D-man. Yeah, I really like that team. Mike Matheson played really well last year. He's probably the number one on D-man on that team, hey?
For now, for sure. For now, yeah.
Yeah, so I got Montreal making that last spot there. Yeah. Noel, move on to you.
You didn't leave me much to chew on, but I'm going to go with Florida number one. It's hard to bet against a team that's coming off a Stanley Cup championship. They locked up their franchise guy. They locked up Reinhardt. They got him on a good ticket. He wants to stay in Florida, and he wants to win again. And after their Cup celebrations, I think they all do. Matthew Tkachuk wants another one. That's a team that didn't take any regression. They didn't take any steps back. And like you touched on, culture is such a big thing in the NHL. And with a bench boss like they have in Maurice, it's huge. They know what it takes to win. They did it last year. And every team, everybody's going to want to be slaying the Giant. They're going to want to be taking down the Panthers. So every game against the Panthers this year, they're going to have to battle. Teams are going to be a little bit more fired up to go into that building. Playing against the defending champs, but I think they've got the team, and I think they've got all the personnel to kind of do what they did again last year. So no more to say about that. Toronto Maple Leafs at second. I think as much as I disagree with your Marner thing, I think that he is a regular season all-star, and I think he's going to dominate as he usually does in the regular season. I disagree with what you say about their come playoff time, but Toronto's offensive upside is just phenomenal. Their defense, like you said, loading up with OEL and Tanev as well. It's going to be huge for them, and they're going to be icing a team that looks a lot better this year than I'd say they did last year.
Hopefully a healthy Joseph Woll,
which would be really important for them, because goaltending's always been kind of a battle there between Samsonov and Joseph Woll. They've never really had a true number one that can consistently win them games. They've had forwards and D-man that step up and win them games, but they've never really had, since Jack Campbell, I'd say a goalie that's playing up to a caliber to win and steal them games. But that being said, I got Toronto at second in the Atlantic. Big news with Austin Matthews taking the captaincy. I'm a huge fan of him. I know you're not, but I he's one of the most electric players to watch in the NHL today, and Toronto at second, no argument there. Third place, I got the Boston Bruins. Exact same reasons as you. They're a team that knows how to win. They are a playoff team. They're born and bred to be in the playoffs, and that's the type of team they are. They know how to get to the dirty areas. They know how to grind you down, and that's what it takes come playoffs. And throughout the regular season, they've got a loaded lineup, and sure, losing Allmark is going to be tough for them, but it's going to be good. They got Swayman as their number one. Give me Boston at third. Going into the four seed, I got the Tampa Bay Lightning. You said everything I had to say. Obviously, it's tough losing guys like Stamkos. It's but they're bringing in a huge piece in Jake Guentzel. He was great for Carolina, and I think that he can step into Tampa Bay and kind of do everything and some that he did in Carolina and Pittsburgh. Sure, he's not going to be playing with Sidney Crosby. Sure, he's not going to be playing with those top dogs in Carolina. But in Tampa Bay, just as many weapons there, and I think he even takes another step up in points this year. He's going to have a phenomenal year, and having him there, how many years is he there for? Do you know off the top of your head?
Who, sorry?
Jake Guentzel.
He signed a 8-year deal or 7-year deal.
So locking him up for long term. Sure, it might not look great on the back end as he starts to kind of regress and age, but right now he looks good, and Tampa Bay wants another one. No Stamkos is going to be weird. That's something I never thought I'd see as a hockey fan, is a guy like Stamkos moving on, and not a huge fan of that from Tampa Bay, not kind of giving the captain what he wanted, especially a guy that's brought so much to that city and to that team and all those Stanley Cups. He was the face of the team, and so many guys are Tampa Bay fans because of that guy. So it's going to be tough to see them on the ice without him, but snaps to Victor Hedman for earning the C. You and I both agreed a long time ago that he'd be the number one replacement for him. So give me the Lightning at four. Montreal Canadiens, nothing to say about them. You said it all, but I also think they're going to sneak into the playoffs. You and I both have a future on them. They have a crazy team with loaded with young guns. It's just a matter of getting hot at the right time. And if those young guys can do what they're meant to do, I mean, Slavkovsky took huge strides last year. We're going to see some more of that this year, I hope. He looks real good in camp. I've seen clips. And Laine, a bona fide sniper on the right wing, I think that he takes a huge step up. He goes back to his old way. He gets back on Fortnite, and he gets back to sniping goals, and I can't wait to see that. At six, I got the Red Wings. They were just so close to making the playoffs last year. I think they got a fire under their ass. I think that they're going to be playing with a little bit of urgency and a little bit of intensity. As you mentioned, it's kind of a make-or-break year for them, and give me them at six. I think they're going to have a great season, but I don't think they're going to quite make it again. Seven, Ottawa. Love the team, love the forwards there. Still don't think they have what it takes to kind of get through. And then Buffalo, as much as you say it's a make or break for them, I don't think they have what it takes. I got them at eighth in the Atlantic there. Prove me wrong, I'd love to see it. In the Metro, I'm going to opposite you. I'm going to take the New Jersey Devils at one. I'm not a huge Jack Hughes fan myself.
Really? Okay.
I don't know why. Grinds my gears a little bit. But if New Jersey Devils are going to be in this one seed, it's going to be all him, I think. He's going to be like a huge part of that. He's going to need to stay healthy. He's going to need to get back to his dominant form. And I think, I don't know, have a tingle that that's exactly what's going to happen. Give me New Jersey at one. Give me New York at second. We talked about them. They're good. They're poised to make another run. I think that they have the grit. They have the team. It's just a matter of if they can get it done in the playoffs. Give me them at second. Coming in third, Carolina Hurricanes. They had a little bit of a tough offseason again. They still can't seem to get over that hump. Rod Brindamore wants it bad. That team wants it bad. You can tell. they have a culture there in Carolina that wants to win. Their fans want to win, and I hope they can. I really like the Carolina Hurricanes. Give me them at third. And in fourth, huge jump up from where you had them in your ranking, give me the Philadelphia Flyers, my boys in orange, adding a big guy, Matt Michkov. That's going
to
be huge for them.
So excited to
I'm
watch him
so
play.
I'm so excited. He looks so good in camp. He's the face of Philadelphia already. Konechny's back. Scott Laughton. They've got a team. They have almost the same team. I don't think they made enough offseason moves to really be like where I'm fired up. They're going to be in the playoffs for sure. But under Tortorella and with the guys they have there, and especially a new face and a franchise player like Matvei Michkov, I think that they're going to sneak in, and I really like them this year. I think they play like dogs, and I want to see that. I can't wait as a Flyers fan for this season.
Did you see Michkov try the Michigan?
I did.
That's crazy.
You think Torts was scratching his head up in the booth when he saw that?
I saw a quote. Apparently, one of the scouts looked right over at Torts. He was on he was sitting in the stands right when he tried it. He looked back up to all the head scouts, just shaking his head. That's gonna be a funny story. That's the one thing. So we both got future. Do you have future? Yeah, we both have futures on Michkov. For the Calder, it's going to be a really interesting dynamic with him and Torts to see. Obviously, Torts likes to stay with his structure, doesn't want players really floating out in that really like creative, spot on the ice, right? He wants everybody to be in their spots. Everything's down to a structure. Everything's down to a T. So it's going to be very interesting, I think, with a skillful player like Michkov, how he kind of lets the leash.
The reason I think that Michkov's going to have the leash and have the opportunity this year is because he's not like a Bedard. He's not like those guys that like to do the dang, like all the crazy shit. Well, he is, and he's capable of it, but just as much as that, he's able to play a full compete game. He's playing pro over in Russia, arguably the second best league in the world behind the NHL. A lot of guys over there that could play in the NHL, but, and he played well. He's the youngest guy in the league. He was dominant. And if he can do that over there in that kind of a structured hockey, I think he can do the exact same thing. And I think he's going to take big strides and be a big name in Philadelphia for years to come. And I think that if Torts benches him or ices him, like, and it's not going to look good on Torts. So I think Torts knows his ass is kind of on the line. Philadelphia already loves this guy. Danny Briere worked his tail off to bring him over early. And as a Flyers fan, he's the face of the team, and I am itching to see them on the ice this year. And then I'm just going to jet through the last three in the division because they're all sleepers. Give me the Islanders at 6, Caps at 7, Jackets at 8. And as far as my playoff teams out of the East, I got Florida at 1, New Jersey at 2, Toronto at 3, Rangers at 4, Hurricanes at 5, Bruins at 6, Lightning at 7, and sneaking in wild card 2, just how you like it, Philadelphia Flyers.
Okay, there we go.
And as far as that goes, we're going to have to wait to see how it plays out, but we're going to be updating and checking back to these rankings, and I have a good feeling about where they're standing right now and how things look. And a team we didn't talk about, Dallas Stars, we're going to talk about one of his players right now, sending it over to our boy, Logan Stankoven.
Joining the show is one-time WHL Player of the Year, one-time CHL Player of the Year, one-time AHL All-Star, and the winner of the 2024 Dudley Garrett AHL Rookie of the Year. Please welcome to the PP3 Podcast, Logan Stankoven. Logan, how you doing, man?
Good. Thanks for having me on.
No worries, dude. Appreciate you taking the time to sit down and sit with us scrubs and talk a little bit of hockey before you head back out to Dallas.
Yeah, sounds good.
Yeah, we were stalking your Instagram a little bit. How was Cabo? How was the trip?
It was a lot of fun. Definitely glad I went. I was kind of debating on whether or not I wanted to kind of get a little vacay there before summer training started, but it's nice to get away and just kind of chill by the pool and hang out by the beach. It was good.
Yeah. Well, I'd say you earned it after the year you just had. Yeah, man. Hopefully you didn't put on too much of a barrel though over there.
No, I tried to keep it slim, but I mean, the food's pretty good. It was all inclusive, so lots of food to go around.
Oh, yeah. How long were you over there for?
I believe it was like 6 days, so it wasn't too long.
Nice. First. Friends and family, or what was it?
Just me and my girlfriend. Yeah.
Nice.
Sweet. Right on.
Right on, man. Well, let's go over your kind of bring up in the hockey. How did you get in the hockey? Your family big athletes growing up, or what was the deal there?
Yeah, a lot of my just like relatives and my dad, especially my dad's side, you know, he had a couple brothers and all three of them played played hockey growing up, and it was just more so my dad. He was a goalie, he didn't go anywhere in hockey, but he just kind of threw me on the skates and took me out skating, and I loved it. So it was all about, you know, road hockey or, you know, skating with the guys or you know, playing mini sticks downstairs. That's what it was all about when I was younger.
That's awesome. And bringing up the goalie side, I actually had some family over visiting from Kamloops not that long ago. And obviously you're a pretty big name around Kamloops and the hockey world. And they said that back in the younger days, they used to stick you in net every now and then. Is that true?
Yeah. I actually loved playing goalie, but definitely glad I didn't stick with it because I'm way too small and I'd always come out of the net, try and score goals as a goalie. So
yeah,
that didn't work out.
And we heard there was something that came up when we were just looking you up. You had a cousin over in Slovakia that you found out about. Tell us how that came about.
Yeah, so I don't know exactly how I'm related to him. It's got to be distant, but yeah, so on my dad's side, his father, which would be my grandpa, he wasn't born there, but his whole family was. So before he was born, they moved over from Slovakia to Canada here. And yeah, basically the rest is history. So that's just kind of how we're related.
That's funny. Noel, did you have the stats for that, for the cousin?
I was just reading up on it. He's doing pretty well over there. He's quite a bit younger than yourself, but he's lighting it up in Slovakia. So it's pretty cool that you got some family over there. I'm sure it's not that common of a last name, so it must have piqued your interest when you saw a message from him. But yeah, that's pretty cool. Keezer, you want to dive into kind of the beginning?
So back into your Thompson Blazers U15 days, you guys went to provincials that year. And I remember playing against you guys, actually. Do you remember anything about that tournament?
Yeah, actually, I do remember hitting a guy from behind.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah.
Oh, that is so good. So
yeah, and I got kicked out. I was pissed for that too. I was so mad.
Do you remember the little jackass who was following you around on the ice?
I honestly don't. That was a long, long time ago. Yeah. But who was it?
It was me.
No way.
Yeah, that's dude. So funny.
Claim to fame around here.
That's hilarious.
When we were playing in the Island finals, we were playing against Racquet Club, and I wasn't doing too much offensively. So they put me up against this guy named Brendan Kerr, and he lit the league up that year. And I shut him down for the two games in the finals there. So throughout the provincials, okay, you got to be on the best player. And then you're like, okay, well, we're going up against Kamloops. You got to go against this Logan kid. I was like, I didn't really follow too much about like draft rankings because that was your draft year, right? For the dub?
No, that was my Bantam first year. Yeah, it was
okay.
The year before.
So they're saying this kid's like a phenom. This kid's going to go pro. He's going to be all this and that. I'm like, whatever, man. It's a Kamloops team. Like, it's probably not that bad. Go up against you. You're just doing circles around me. I'm out of breath like 10 seconds into my shift. And then I remember there was an icing. And so basically, whenever you're on the ice, coach would yell Keogh's line. I'd go out there and just basically be on your ass.
Yeah.
And so the one shift I wasn't on you, you scored I think it was a rebound goal in front of the net.
Yeah.
And I got absolutely lit up on the bench. And thank God you hit Nolan Ross from behind in the second period.
Yeah, that was pretty bad. That was a tough one. But I think we did end up winning that game. I was rattled. I couldn't believe I got kicked. That was my first time I'd ever gotten kicked out of a game because like I'm not known to be like a dirty player. But yeah, that's funny looking back on that.
Oh yeah, our assistant coach Nolan was about to get up. He's like, "Stay down, stay down."
Yeah, yeah,
yeah. So I just wanted to mention that's all time right there. So the next year you go over to Yale Hockey Academy. You played with a couple Island boys, some guys that are really well known on the Island: Kobe Rubicki, Parker Bell, Nolan Bentham. You guys had a pretty good team that year, right?
Yeah, we did. We had solid squad there. So, and those guys were big parts too. Like, they're all three of those guys are really good players. So,
Yeah, we're pretty close with Parker Bell. I grew up playing with him, and he's been on the podcast himself. He's a good guy. Do you remember, you got any stories playing with him? I know you guys were both with the same agency and stuff.
I don't, oh, it was a few years ago, but yeah. I remember that year, I felt bad for him because he had some bad injuries that year, but I just remember whenever he was in the lineup, he seemed to score or have an impact. So I think he could have even been drafted higher if he, you know, played a full season there, because he had some pretty ugly injuries. But
sure.
Yeah, him and Kobe Verbicki, those two were studs. So
yeah, and speaking of impact players, that year you only went 3 games without a point out of the whole season, and that's only 4 games without a goal. So obviously a monumental season, kind of for your development, and kind of even more so getting your name even further out there in the hockey world. What was it like playing over in Vancouver? Was that your first time living and playing away from home?
Yeah, it was. It was a bit different just leaving home at a young age, but I ended up staying with one of my good buddies, Jake Chazon, who I'd played spring hockey with growing up. So I knew him pretty well, and their family took me in and made the transition pretty easy.
That's awesome.
And then the next year you go back over to Kamloops, play with the Thompson's Blazers, a U18 team. And I remember just watching a lot of your games just over at when you'd come over to Nanaimo, and you just lit the league up, broke Tyson Joe's single season goal record, 44 goals that was. You also played 13 games that year with the Blazers in the Dub. So playing those games, kind of having the switch from major midget over to, I guess, semi-pro is what the WHL really is. Was it a realization of what your game has to get to the next level?
Yeah, for sure. Just everything happens so much faster, and yeah, just you know, in major midget you can kind of wheel around a bit and you have so much time and space. And I remember getting called up for those first few games, like I think you only had like 1 assist in the first 7 games and then 2 points in 6 playoff games. So it was tough to produce, and it's hard being, you know, a 15, 16-year-old, because there's such a big, you know, at that age, you know, only, even though it's only like 4 or 5 years, but it's just such a big difference. You know, you're playing against guys that are fully matured and you're only 14, 15-year-old kids. So it is a bit weird, but glad I got that experience.
Do you think that those 13 games that season led you to be a little bit more successful and more prepared the year following? Do you think it gave you a bit of a leg up, kind of knowing what you're getting into?
Yeah, for sure. I think that definitely helped. Just, you know, going into that summer, I kind of knew what it took to get to that level, and just kind of knowing, yeah, it's not going to be easy, but it was nice to get that first taste.
Was there any thought of going to college instead of the Dub, or being with Kamloops was just a no-brainer for you?
I tried to keep both options open. I didn't know where I was going to land in the draft and what team was going to take me. I think everything just worked out really well with the Blazers kind of being in that top five range, which was really nice. And those other teams kind of respected that, you know, I wanted to play for my hometown. And but yeah, college was an option. I'd had offers from North Dakota, Denver, and University of Michigan. So those were the three big, you know, university/college teams that were interested in me. But I'm glad that the Blazers were able to select me.
Did you do any campus visits?
No, I didn't. Oh. I know they're thinking about doing it, you know, inviting me out, but I was pretty sold on the Blazers.
Yeah, fair enough, man. And what a career you had with the Blazers. 12th all-time in regular season points, 323 points in 216 games. Just absolutely lit that league up. One of the Blazers for all time when you look at the history books. You're the captain in your 19, 20-year-old year. What did that mean to you to get a C with your hometown team?
Yeah, it was huge. I was, you know, a big supporter of the Blazers growing up, and just remember all the playoff games, and yeah, I was just a huge fan. So it was pretty cool to wear the C in front of friends and family, and definitely a huge honor, because a lot of great players have came through that organization.
And also with your first year in the Blazers and second year, you also played with the Team Canada U17, U18 team. You played with your soon-to-be teammate Wyatt Johnson.
Was there any, were you guys buddies back then? You guys kind of talk in the dressing room? Were you guys close at that point or not really till you got into the Dallas organization?
Yeah, me and Wyatt are really good buddies. And we actually played spring hockey against each other when we were like 10, 11 years old. So I knew of him and we played together for one tournament and I kind of got to know him really well there. And he was like one of my good buddies. So got to play with him at U17s, U18s. Obviously, he didn't get to play at World Juniors because he was already in the show. But he's a great dude, and looking forward to playing with him for a lot of more years, hopefully.
And one of your buddies on Kamloops, one of your good buddies, Dylan Garand, all 3 years he played with you, he had over a 0.92 save percentage. He's a good Victoria boy here on the island. Any good stories you got with him? Or
He's just so dialed in, and that's why he's such a great goalie. Goalies can be a bit quirky and you know, a bit different, but I think with G, he's got his own routines, and he's so focused, and he doesn't let any of the outside noise get to him. So I'm sure I'd have a lot of good stories if I could, you know, take some time to think back. But he's just a different type of human being. Just he's quite the character.
Yeah, you got to be a goalie.
Yeah.
So yeah, after that, you did great with Team Canada U17 and U18, and then obviously two historic championships with Team Canada and the World Juniors. Man, how electric was it to be on that stage and playing for your country and arguably one of the most watched hockey events like ever?
Yeah, it's sweet. Like just the fan support and you know, getting to play against different teams and, you know, different countries to see the other skill that's out there. It's cool to play against those, you know, smaller countries because they have a lot to play for. Especially, you know, being on Team Canada, everybody wants to beat Canada. And so, just getting to experience that and, see, you know, how great the fans are and, how much they love the World Juniors. It's great.
So you played in Halifax and Moncton for the two championships, correct?
It was Edmonton. That was the one during the summer. It got canceled. So that was the Summer World Juniors. And then like 4 months later was in Halifax there.
And which one was more electric? Where did you prefer to play?
I think the Halifax one was, there was just more buzz around it because it was more traditional, obviously, at Christmas time. The one in the summer was a lot of fun too. But the support wasn't as great because it was in the middle of summer and, we did play at a Rogers Arena or Rogers Center there. So, pretty big rink. So some of the games were a little bit empty, but, I think it was the semis in the gold medal game was just packed. So that was cool to see.
Yeah, 21 points in the 14 games across those two tournaments that you played in. You were on the ice for Kent Johnson's game-winning goal in 2022. You actually got the game-winning assist. Where did you pull the balls off to make a toe-y?
Yeah.
That was just instinct, I think. I was hoping that he had a bit more speed so I could just pass it to him on the two-on-one, but that D-man kind of slid towards me and I felt that the other Finnish guy was kind of on my ass there. So just kind of made a little bit of a toe drag and tried to get it over to him. He did the rest. So
as you got it across, you're watching the puck go over the goal line, you get bear hugged, wrapped up by the guy taken down. How cool was that feeling to just hear the arena explode and get in on that celebration and be such a big part of that goal?
Yeah, it was surreal. The building was pretty loud, and it's just kind of a moment where you black out. You don't really know what to do. You're just, it's nuts. So it was funny that I got bear hugged there. So yeah.
Well, I'm glad
he finished it off. So
that's nice. Well, at least you didn't black out like your boy Gunther forgetting to celebrate after the gold medal goal the following year, was it?
Yeah.
I was kind of razz him about that. He didn't seem to realize how big of a goal it was. Everybody else was freaking out, and it didn't seem like he knew what he did.
Yeah, he doesn't really silly too hard. He's a pretty simple guy. Like for all of his goals, like whenever I watch his highlights, he just kind of gives more of a fist bump or puts his arms up in the air. But yeah, it's pretty funny that both, you know, both finals or both gold medal games went to overtime.
Was that his honest reaction then, and scored the gold medal winning goal?
Or yeah, really? He doesn't get like crazy. Too jacked up. Like he's just pretty level headed.
He's a better man than me. I was hucking one leg sellies in junior B regular season games. Better man than I am, that's for sure.
And your final year with Kamloops, I want to go over that a little bit. Massive trade that year, getting Olin Zellweger and Ryan Hofer. You guys gave up 4 players and 10 draft picks total in order to get those 2 players. With you being a captain on that team, did the GM come up to you at all and kind of discuss things at all, like go over asset management and stuff like that with you and kind of got your idea, or what was the deal there?
Honestly, not really. I knew we were going to try and you know, make sure that we're on the market and looking for players, but no, like I didn't expect it to be that many players and kind of assets, you know, traded back the other way. But at that point, like you're hosting Mem Cup, you know you're going to be there for sure, so you want to make sure you have a solid team and a competitive team. So it was pretty cool that we were able to get, you know, Zellweger. We were kind of talking about it at World Juniors because it wasn't long after that when he got traded to us. So you know, I was kind of, you know, razzing him about, hey, you're going to come to the Blazers, this and that. And he didn't really say too much about it, but it was nice to get him and Hofer. Those guys were huge ads for us.
That's cool.
And yeah, so that year, obviously it wasn't the year end result that you guys wanted there at home, but how cool of a year was it personally for you to be born and raised in Kamloops? You're the captain of the team. You're a diehard fan when you're a kid, and you get to play your final junior game at home. How much did that mean to you?
Yeah, it was huge. I definitely miss it a lot. It was a good 4 years. Obviously, too bad with COVID. It kind of messed up a year and a bit there. But yeah, it was awesome to play in front of friends and family each night. And I just wanted to kind of represent the community and you know, leave the organization in a good spot and make sure that I'm a role model for, you know, the younger kids coming up. So
yeah, cool. I think you definitely did that, man. Like I mentioned, family from Kamloops, they're all like, not just the hockey families, everybody kind of is keeping up to date with how you're doing and how you're doing in Dallas. And that's awesome. So it obviously goes to show you left a mark on the city of Kamloops and the hockey world as well. So that's awesome, man. It's a great way to go out and end off junior kind of with a bang like that.
Yeah. Thank you.
And then what a first year you had last year, pro hockey, going up to Texas. You had 57 games and 57 points, pardon me, in 47 games. Then you get the call up to Dallas, 14 points in your first 24 games. Let's touch on Texas. What a prospect pool the Dallas organization has. You played with Maverick Bork, Antonio Stranges, Christian Kyrou, couple prospects there that your organization is really looking to have flourish in the upcoming years. How exciting of a time is it around Dallas right now? The city buzz, the organization's buzz. How cool is it to be a part of that organization right now?
Yeah, I think it's a perfect situation to kind of step into. I didn't know what to expect, you know, coming in this year where I was going to be, but most likely going to have to start in the A. But I think just the whole organization has a good mix of, you know, veterans like, you know, Duchesne and Ben Sagan, you know, some older guys like that you can rely on to come up big and kind of lead the way. But then they have the younger guys like Ottinger and Robertson and Harley and those guys, you know, obviously Johnston too. So I think it's great to see that there's a mix of both, you know, young and old. And yeah, I had a lot of fun last year between, you know, Texas and Dallas too.
When you got to Texas, you started the year there. What was the difference of pace of play? Was it even a step further than the WHL? Was it something you had to adjust to? Or how did you find it was getting your feet wet in pro hockey?
I think it was maybe a bit faster than the dub, but I think just more the size of the players. You're just going up against, you know, grown men, and it's just a bit different, the pro lifestyle. you know, some guys are just stepping in the league and other guys already have a couple kids and are married and have kind of settled down. So it's a bit different dynamic when it comes to that sort of thing. But yeah, grateful that I was able to kind of get my feet wet first down in the AHL, and I think it prepared me better for when I was called up.
Yeah, you had a heck of a year in Texas. AHL All-Star, year-end AHL First Team All-Star. You won AHL Rookie of the Year. Was there any vets on that team that gave you a lot of guidance at the beginning of the year to kind of, you can expect personally, just heading into the A for your first year?
Yeah, the captain, Curtis McKenzie, he'd been around for a while now, and he had a couple stints in the NHL, so he knew what it took to get there. He was really good to me and the other younger guys, and he's another BC boy. I think he's from Golden, so yeah, it was nice to kind of just get to know him a little bit more, and he always had my back. We were line mates, too. It was usually me, him, and Bork on a line, so that was a lot of fun.
It's pretty cool. Good way to get your feet wet.
Yeah, for sure. And playing in the A for that many games, is there any prospects I'm curious about that you went up against or watched where you're like, okay, this guy's got what it takes to make it to the next level, but nobody's really talking to him or talking about him?
Yeah, there was quite a few guys. On Milwaukee, they had Zach LaRue. So that's Nashville's AHL team. He just always seemed to score against us. And I even remember, like, when I was up with Dallas, like, Milwaukee ended up playing Texas in playoffs, and I think he had like 7 or 8 goals in that one series. So he's a really good player. And Rocco Grimaldi, he also played in the NHL, but he was down in the AHL playing for the Chicago Wolves. Another smaller guy, but just so crafty and really skilled. So I think those were the two main guys.
Before we get to the moment you kind of got called up to Dallas, let's dial it back a bit and talk about draft day. Was that, how memorable of a day was that for you? And was Dallas the place you expected to land, or was it kind of up in the air until it happened?
Yeah, I didn't really know too much about where I was going to go. I know there was a few teams that were really interested in me. And usually when teams come back to you throughout the, you know, the interview process leading up to it, like, I believe I had LA come back quite a few times, Seattle, Boston. So those were kind of the three main teams that I thought, hey, they're interested in me. Maybe I go to one of those teams. But Dallas had only spoke to me once. But I think also with Tom Glardy, you know, being the owner of both the Blazers and Dallas, there's a pretty good connection there. So they didn't really need to, you know too much more about me. But glad it worked out that way.
That's awesome. So yeah, now going back, you, like we mentioned, you had a great performance in the AHL to start it all off. What was it like when you got the call that you were heading up to Dallas and playing with the big boys?
Yeah, I was just really excited. I didn't know how long of a stint I was going to get, but wanted to make sure that each shift, just kind of give it my all and do, you know, my role to the best of my ability and see where things go. And fortunately for me, I was able to stay up there with the team and finish the year off. So that's kind of how it went, and just really thankful for that opportunity.
Sure. Yeah, well, you stepped into the league and you made the NHL your bitch in the first 6 games. 8 points in your first 6 games, just absolutely on fire. You scored your first goal at home against the Islanders. What was that feeling like at home, scoring your first goal in the NHL?
Yeah, it was awesome. I, you know, having my family in the building for that one too, and in front of the home crowd, they were pretty excited, and I was pumped too. I didn't expect to score in my second game, so yeah, it was a hot start, and I cooled off a bit after that. But hopefully this year be more consistent.
For sure. What was your kind of welcome to the league moment? Was there a big hit or a fight or a goal or anything like that that just kind of shook you and you're like, holy shit, this is real now? Was there any specific moment that stands out to you?
There was a lot, I think. You know, when you're playing against some of the top dogs like Crosby and McDavid and McKinnon, you know, that's a pretty good welcome to the NHL thing. I think I got rocked in playoffs against Vegas. Braden McNabb just stepped up on me there along the boards and smoked me. So that was a good wake up call. It didn't hurt. I was fine, but that was definitely the hardest I've ever been hit. So those were a couple of good moments.
I wanted to ask you against your guys' game away at San Jose. You had 4 points yourself. Wyatt, your good buddy, had 5 points. I remember watching that game because I think me and Nolan, we put a bet on you guys when you guys were down, and you guys ended up coming up big. That game must have been so cool for you two youngsters that are getting all this hype, and you guys just absolutely lit the game up. And I guess probably your best game of the year, would you say?
Yeah, I think so for sure. That was definitely a game to remember. Just the comeback, obviously, itself, but being able to contribute like that early on was really cool. And that was a fun game to be part of.
Oh, I bet. And when you guys went over to the playoffs, that's where the big boy hockey comes out. Just like you said, getting rocked by Braden McNabb. You guys played Vegas in the first round, Colorado second round, Edmonton third round, just a couple powerhouses that you guys went up against. What would you say was the biggest test for yourself personally in your first couple games of playoff experience?
I think just the speed and maybe a bit of physicality too. I think that Vegas series was definitely the most physical out of the three. I think the Colorado series was a mix of, you know, fast paced and physical too, but then the Edmonton series was just like all gas. So I think the first couple series kind of wore us down, and it almost seemed like we ran out of gas there for that last series against Edmonton.
And I mean, going up against McKinnon second round, McDavid third round, I mean, watching on TV is just a totally different way of watching those two players. When you're on the ice or just on the bench watching those two guys fly, arguably the two best players in the NHL, what's it like? Is it a little nerve-wracking? Like, how the hell am I supposed to defend these guys, or what's going through your head?
I think it was at first, but then once you get to the second, third game and you're going out against these guys, I think it's almost more of a a hungriness. I think I was, excited to go out against those guys and try and shut them down and make sure that they don't score. So it's hard to do that. They're just so skilled and so fast. They're just on a whole nother level. Everybody's good at that in that league, but I think those guys are just, at the next level. So it was fun to go out there and try and shut those guys down, keep them off the score sheet.
And I'm curious, now being in Texas for a full year, is there any new hobbies that you've picked up over there? And are you a big football or baseball fan, or what do you do in your off time?
Honestly, I haven't picked anything new up yet. I usually don't like to, there's lots of good golf down there, but I usually don't like to golf in season. Usually just try and focus on hockey, but I know there's quite a few guys that enjoy hitting the links after practice or on off days. But I think just being down there, it's just natural to get more into football. So maybe this year I'll get more into that.
For sure. You got a team yet?
No, I don't yet. I do like, I mean, it's easy to hop on the Chiefs bandwagon, but
come on.
I like Mahomes. So yeah.
I also saw, when you got called up to Dallas, were you living at Joe Pavelski's place?
So when I was called up, I stayed in a hotel for about a week, and then I went to Joe's place, and I was just kind of there for about 5-6 weeks, and then I had family and my girlfriend come down to stay for a bit, so then I went back to the hotel. But that was awesome getting to live with him.
Yeah, Joe, Wyatt. I know I remember watching one of Wyatt's interviews over at Joe's place. You got the kids and the dogs and
sick
driveway with a basketball hoop. What was living at that place like, and how much just with those couple weeks with Joe, just knowing how great of a person he is and a leader, what does he mean to you?
Yeah, it was huge. Just unreal getting to stay there, and really, thoughtful of him to kind of let me into his house. And obviously he already had Wyatt there, so I didn't really want to impose on him too much staying there. But with him kind of being his his last year. He had kind of told us beforehand, not many people knew, but pretty nice of him to kind of take me under his wing and kind of show me the ropes. And they had a great spot there. Him and his wife, you know, had great food cooked for us always. So yeah, heck of a spot.
Must be nice to be able to learn from a guy like that, how to be a professional and kind of take some notes out of that guy's book. And hopefully he taught you a little bit about tipping pucks.
Totally. Yeah, he did for sure at camp. He'd always kind of teach us in front of the net, some of us young bucks. So it was nice.
That's was awesome. Joe the guy that kind of took you under your wing when you came up, or was there another vet that you kind of leaned on for guidance?
Yeah, I think him and Jamie Benn. I think those were the two guys for sure.
Well, BC boys, that's awesome.
Yeah.
Yeah. Curious, who's the most active guy in your guys' group chat, and what's the name of it?
We didn't really have, like, we have like a message group chat, but honestly, like, guys don't really say anything like in the group chat, like, unless it's like something that we need to know. Like, guys aren't like screwing around. It's all business. Like I said, it's we had like a pretty veteran team, so guys weren't like goofing around. There was more stuff in our AHL group chat, just with having younger guys, and guys like to mess around and send messages out. But I think from that team, I'd say Nick Camano.
Okay.
He was a little bit more of a veteran guy, but he loved messing with us young guys. So
pulling That's pranks awesome. And stuff.
Yeah, always. Yeah.
Did he get you?
I don't know if he got me, but he'd gotten some other guys. Like, we'd have different colored helmets, and when we'd go to our practice rink, like, he'd switch some players' helmets. So they'd show up to the rink wearing, like, if we were supposed to wear black for the practice, he'd like switch theirs out and like put white instead of black. So just little things like that. Or, like, I think maybe take like soles out of a guy's skate or something. So, but luckily the practice rink was like right across the road. So, you didn't have to go far if he was messing with you or if you forgot something.
Right on.
That's funny. So the boys would have to walk across the street to go grab their other helmets?
Well, it was across the freeway, so you had to drive. You couldn't walk. Oh. So, yeah, it's tough.
Yes. Speaking of guys messing with gear, I wanted to ask, are you a superstitious guy when it comes to your gear and your sticks, or you got anything like that?
No, not really. I have like my own routine, but that's just more to kind of get me ready for the game. Like, nothing too superstitious. Like, when it comes to meals, I usually like to try and keep it the same if I'm playing well. If not, then I'll switch it up and try and eat something different. But no, nothing crazy.
Right. What's the go-to meal?
Usually salmon and rice, or chicken and rice with like sweet potato and salad. So
nice.
Pure, yeah. Pure.
It's a little bit different than my farmers or Apsbury game.
Hey, whatever gets you going.
Talking about that guy, Nick Camano, being a kind of a comedian, between the two leagues and the two teams you played with, who was the best chirper you played with? Who was the best trash talker on your team? And what were some of the best chirps you heard out there?
That's a good question. I think with the AHL team, Antonio Stranges had some pretty funny chirps. He wasn't a guy to get into it, but when he did, he would tear guys apart. Like, he's just one of those guys where, like, if you chirp him, like, he just has chirps like that will roll off his tongue, like, just easy. So usually you don't want to get caught in the crossfire, but he wasn't like a guy that would always chirp. But yeah, if he did get into it, it was just hard not to laugh because he had some good ones.
That's awesome.
And to go back to the draft just really quickly, when we had Parker on, he talked with us about Montreal, how he got ripped apart by one of the Montreal scouts. I'm curious, did you have any interesting draft questions or draft interviews?
No, but I do think, yeah, Montreal's was a bit on the odd side. Yeah, I think there was like a couple questions where it was like, if you were an animal, like, what would you be? I think that was one of the questions. And I believe like the Islanders, New York Islanders questionnaire was like almost like a test, and it was like an hour long. So that was like a bit like overkill in my opinion, but yeah, it was just like all like personality, like kind of like trick questions, and it was like an hour long at least.
That's crazy.
So yeah, it was pretty extreme, some of those.
The last question I had for, or actually I got two questions left. The first one, I'm going to ask you about your nickname, Stanky. I know you prefer Stank personally, right?
Yeah.
So how do you feel about when you got announcers on national games calling you Stanky, and you got Biz calling you Stanky? How did you feel about that?
I was fine with it. I like either, obviously, like you said, like I do prefer the Stank, but I just think it's funny. Like those guys are hilarious. So I don't really care. It's pretty cool that they're even acknowledging me. So, yeah, it's funny.
And last one, kind of a fun one that I have for you. If you're Gary Bettman for one day, what's the first thing you would change in the league?
I think maybe, I don't know, find some way to maybe like shorten the season. I think the season does go a bit too long. I guess it's different if you don't make playoffs, but like you're essentially going from, you know, basically early September till, or mid early September till like basically end of June if you're making Stanley Cup finals, and it doesn't give you much off time. So I think maybe condense the schedule a bit. Maybe not as many games, like 82 games is a lot. And then maybe expand the league a bit more, like maybe put a team down in Houston or, yeah, I don't know, add a team. I think maybe a team up in like Quebec City would be cool. Yeah, I don't know. I'm sure there's a lot of different answers you could give, but
yeah,
those are mine.
Another question I had for you is, you got to play in a lot of famous barns and a lot of crazy atmospheres. What road barn was the hardest for you to play in, and why?
I think, you know, being able to play at Rogers there, like in playoffs against Edmonton, I wouldn't say it was hard. I think it was a lot of fun. Just the atmosphere was so loud in there, and they're really passionate about the Oilers. So that was definitely one of the coolest barns to play in. I think some of the games were hard to get up for. I shouldn't say hard to get up for because you're playing the NHL, but like when you go to San Jose and like half the building's full, like it's just like kind of sad. Like hopefully the fans can get out more this season, and I know they didn't have the greatest team, but yeah, it's too bad when teams can only fill half the building on some nights.
Right.
Noel, anything else you wanted to ask?
Not really, man. Like you said, you're heading out soon. And yeah, I got no more questions, but I definitely want to say thank you for taking the time to kind of sit down and chat with us. It's really big for us to kind of have you on. And yeah, man, we really appreciate it. And we wish you the best of luck this year in the upcoming season, and hope you can kind of replicate and even improve on what you did last year and keep building on that. We'll be watching from the island as we did last year. Big fans over here. And yeah, we hope everything goes to plan and you take another step up, and hope you cash out. I got a little future on you for the Calder.
Yeah, sounds good. I'll try and win you some money then.
Thanks, Stank. Thanks for coming on, dude.
Yeah, we appreciate it.
Yeah, no problem. Thanks for having me, guys.
Huge round of snaps, huge stick taps. What an honor it was to have Logan Stankoven join us. Our first NHL guest. It's an honor to have him on, and what a great guy he was to talk to. As you guys heard, me and Kehoe both have stories playing against him, and yeah, it's just awesome to get him on here. He's a great guy, and we're really glad he made the time. We got money on him for the Calder.
Yeah,
he's our boy.
He's got my bonus bets on him.
He told us he's going to go and make us some money, and fuck is he ever, man. That guy can play hockey. I'm so excited to see what he does and kind of the progression he makes in the Dallas offense. He loves to be there by the sounds of it. They love having him there. Living with Joe Pavelski. Yeah. Like, he's got the veterans in his life. Like, he knows how to play at a professional level already after 1 year. And that's really impressive and something you don't see a lot of time. And as you and I said, after the draft, Dallas getting them where they did, such a steal, man. I could ramble about it all day, but once again, thanks for coming on, Logan. We hope you guys enjoyed that interview as much as we did. But yeah,
Yeah, and just before, obviously we're going over the Western Conference next year, but I think I think it's only fitting to kind of talk about the Dallas Stars a little bit with Stank. It's going to be so exciting to watch him this year. I think for everybody in BC, they're going to be staying on top to see how Logan does in the Calder rankings and how Dallas does. And you look at Wyatt Johnson, the way he was able to elevate his game. You look Maverick Bourque, that's another top prospect. He's probably going to be sliding into their third line. Thomas Harley just signed a four-year ticket this year. Same with Iza Lendell. They got all the pieces there. It's going to be a super exciting year for him. And thanks again, Logan, for coming on. That was a great conversation. Hope you guys really enjoyed it. And moving on to the VIJHL, the
Back
jungle.
Back to where we all started.
They got the visors this year. A big deal. Them obviously leaving Hockey Canada. Everything changes there. And then the biggest move, I think, at least from a player's perspective, that it's something that all players kind of look towards when they're playing on a junior hockey team is, oh, I get to get rid of the cages
cage.
And get to put the visor on. So it's something that I really want to hear your opinion about, because, I mean, there's been a lot of mixed reviews, especially from, obviously, from a parent side of things. It's a lot different from a player's. But the amount of face injuries this year so far in the first two weeks, yeah, it's fucking crazy. It's almost like every game. The one game we went to, thank God Grayson Erickson's okay or only has a concussion. Like, that could have been way worse. If you guys didn't see it, he got in a fight against the Bucks. I believe it was in the third period. Went down to the ice and banged his head right against the ice. Went out cold. Hobbled off. Head was cracked open a little bit. Absolute warrior walking off of the ice there. But it's just scary scenes. And there's a lot of scary scenes that have been happening in the VI so far. Lots of pucks. Tons of sticks.
We saw a huge gash. Somebody took a slapper to the face. Tate Wilkinson from the Cary Park Islanders.
Is that the one that was posted on VI Hockey Insider?
Just
yeah,
an absolute gash on his face, man. And as you said, we're hearing lots of mixed reviews. I think it kind of differs between parents and players. I mean, if as a player, if there could have been visors when I played my 4 years of junior, but it meant I lost a tooth or it meant I took a puck to the face, and I'm taking it all day. Mm-hmm. I am, man. Like, to get the opportunity to play with visors, it's a different style of hockey. And I think that's the one thing that you and I agreed on. Like, the players don't know how to play with visors. Sure, we don't either. We never got the opportunity to, but these young guys coming out, they've never had the chance. They don't have the older guys that have been out in the league with visors that know how to teach them how to play. Sticks are high. Pucks are high. They're not worried about, like, chucking guys on the ice. That's the scary part. But I think as we progress through the season, the visors are a great idea. It's junior hockey. There should be fighting. There should be visors. I think it's great that it's back to it. I wish it was a year earlier. And I'm going to read a comment from a parent in the VIJHL. As a parent of a player in the VI and whose son last week in an exhibition game took a puck to the face, required stitches. Same game, an Oceanside player also required stitches from a stick. Then our home opener, a player from the bench took a puck to the face and is out injured. This makes 4 weeks, and I'm just curious if visors is a good idea or not. And a lot of backlash on that comment. All the players that are answering it are all saying, you'll get used to it. This is right. And all the parents are on his side. I think obviously it's tough as a parent to see your kids get a puck in the face or get knocked out, obviously. But personally as a player, and I think I speak for all players, visors, you want them. It looks better. You feel better. You can see better. It changes the game. And I think give it a couple months into the season. These kids will figure it out. And I think it's beneficial for the VIJHL overall.
And yeah, I just wanted to talk about that. Your point there, players not really knowing how to play with the visors yet. At least the one game that I haven't seen too many clips. Obviously, I've seen a couple pictures of a couple boys' faces, and you showed me the Bucks group chat from last year.
Yeah,
was going crazy. Like
four
the first,
guys
like,
in
three
one night.
Games. Yeah,
missing what? Tooth, broken cheekbone, and a huge gash on the face all in the same game.
So yeah, with that being said, like, I'm not trying to make it sound like people are intentionally injuring people's faces or try to crack people's heads open or anything like that, but just the one incident that I saw with Erickson, he was fighting Elfie DeBrun I'm not 100% sure if I pronounce his last name right, but as he's going down, he got another shot, Erickson, from Alfie.
And he's out cold.
And I'm not saying that he did that on purpose, and I don't think that's fair for anybody to assume he wanted to injure him while he was down. I think it's more just the heat of the moment thing, right? If you think that's probably his first fight on the ice, you think about the amount of juices that are flowing through your body, right? All your anticipation, right? It's just the heat of the moment thing where you see your opponent down, the guy that you're going up against, and you just kind of, you hit him one last time, right? So to your point, those are the incidents that in the heat of the moment, you got to instill in the players, you can't do that. That's where you cut off. No matter how hard it is for you to hold back, those are the little things that you look in the NHL, like you have fighters that once a player's going down, they're catching them, right? Those are the things that are going to have to be taught to these players if you want visors to be kept in the league, right? Because a lot of parents, and I don't blame them at all, want it out of the league. And I mean, we've talked about it before. Now that it's out, like it's going to take at least 2 years for people to actually get used to it. I think it's going to be a couple years worth of, I guess, yeah, just teams
busted teeth in order, and busted
in
cheeks.
Order to really like realize how to play, how to keep your stick down, where to put pucks. And I just don't know if the skill level's there in the VI this year where you can just easily do that. So, I mean, it's going to be an interesting thing to follow throughout this year. Like, I mean, there's a lot of teams, obviously, that like the standings have changed
drastically,
but that's a big one there is just how the safety is going to be. Because I mean, a lot of teams, right, you look at GMs, they're paying the insurance bills on everything, right? So who knows if insurance is going to go up. That affects players' costs for next year.
It's not covered by Hockey Canada
exactly
anymore.
So it's going to be an interesting topic to follow. Obviously, I'm assuming all the boys in the VI are around the junior hockey and BC listening to this, or they want the visors in, and I don't blame them because it's a sick thing, right? You post your IG picture, you got the visor on, you look sick, right? It's a style thing. Yeah. It's a cool thing, right? You look forward to that as a kid, but from a player's perspective and from a league perspective, I don't blame them if maybe something gets proposed about taking them out or something along
those
lines.
I'm sure there's going to be arguments for years to come.
For sure.
You look at the VI, they went back to it. The KI went back to it. The PJ went back to it. But the BCIHL, which is university level hockey, majority of the players in this league are coming from junior A and junior B and have played with visors before. Their league vetoed it. So that just goes to show, maybe it's not the best thing. Like you say, as a player, I would have wanted it. As a parent, it's hard to say like, yeah, sign me up. Or as a GM or somebody that has to cover the bills, it's hard to say sign up for it. I'm sure lots of you are on the fence. We have our sides to it, but we'll be keeping you updated with everything to come with the VI. That's just a little teaser on it. We're not going to be giving you any kind of updates or any predictions for the VI just yet because it's such a different league this year so far. But we're excited to bring everything to you.
And talking about how different of a league is, I'm looking at the standings right now, and I don't know if I didn't follow enough throughout the offseason player moves, but the fucking Portal Bernie Bombers are first in the league right now. What?
Yeah.
What world are we living in? What the fuck happened? Looking at their team, like, holy shit, man.
They've got a team.
Yeah. They got this Liam Smith kid, 11 points in 5 games. Grayson Salmon, 11 points in 5 games.
They got a
bunch of boys that are 2 points per game right now. I've never heard of any, like, I think this is just for anybody that's like 19 or 20, a couple of years out of the league, watching back like your junior leagues, you know, maybe a quarter, not even a quarter of the players that are playing. It's crazy now.
Yeah.
And I mean, good on the Bombers, right? They got the, like, if they, obviously, I'm assuming they're going to get in the playoffs this year, looking at their team. If they're able to fill up that barn for playoffs,
it'd be electric.
It'd be absolutely electric. So good on that fan base, and or good on the franchise for getting their team around and
a little stick tap PP3 boost to my good buddy Ethan Aston. He just played his first year junior for the Bombers last year, and now he's assistant coach of the Bombers. Not a big deal. So snaps to him. Big fan of the show. Shout out Ethan Aston.
Another little surprising bit there. The Predators start off the year 0-5 after winning the league. That's not something I expected to see at all. Westhaver, such a strong year from him last year. Look at that leader. It's crazy looking at the league this year. Jens, they're 500. The Bucks are 500. I mean, just watching that game. Look what you did for the franchise, bud?
89 brought him in, boys.
just looking at that team playing against the Jens in Parksville. Like, they had a couple new kids there that looked really, really good. Had some skill, made some plays. It's just a completely different league, so it'll be exciting to keep you guys updated on this stuff. Obviously, it's a little bit weird for us not knowing everybody that's on the teams or really being able to follow everything that's happening, so we'll give you guys a little tidbits throughout this season. Maybe probably at the end of each episode, just updating you on anything that's happening, any news we're hearing, like we're saying. But anything else you wanted to add about the VI, Nola?
Nothing about the VI. Jens need to figure it out. Bucks keep it going. I got two dogs in the race this year, so I'm excited to see how it plays out.
And we're not going to announce it this week, but there's some really, really exciting news with our podcast. We've had an opportunity to do something that it's a massive milestone for us. It's something that I don't think we really saw coming when we started this, right? For the people that are day oneers, listen from the very first Evan Dice episode at 2040 Grunge Street and kind of heard we're just going to have a bunch of boys on and just kind of
shoot the shit,
have fun. And looking at where we are now, it's
interviewing NHL players.
Yeah. It's something that's really cool to us. So there's going to be a big announcement probably next week. And we're really excited to bring that to you guys. Nothing's going to change on our end. It's going to be the same, broadcast, the same, I guess same days, probably uploading. Everything's going to be the same. We might get some better guests on for you guys. Probably will do. Probably some more social media stuff, like some reels and some posts. So it's nothing but good things for the people that enjoy listening to us interview people and talk about hockey.
And for those people who've been sticking around since the beginning, since the Evan Dice episode, we're 19 episodes in. 350 followers on the Instagram account and counting, 10,000 views on our last post, which is unbelievable. Just a huge thank you to everybody that's kind of stuck around for the ride. The reason we do this is because you guys love it, and we love doing it too. So we appreciate you guys every day, and we hope you guys stick around. And PP3 out. All right, what is it you want to do when you grow up? Hey, yo, I'm going to be a titter. That's all my eyes can see. Victory is mine. Yeah, surprisingly, I've been laying, waiting for your next mistake. I put in work and watch my status escalate. Now I'ma start collecting props, connecting plots, networking like a conference. Cause the nonsense is yet to stop. Jake, shake me down. Haters wanna take me down, break me down, clap. All they heard was a sound. Yo, I scoped it out. I took your weak dream and choked it out. Your bitch don't really got no ass. She just poked it out on the D-Lo. I'm saying you versus me, yo. We can do this shit right here in front of your people. See, time is money, kid, and BS walks. And to me, it's funny, kid, when you meet heads talk. I see feds talk. They wanna dig up the dirt, son. Is it me they hawk? Cause I be putting in work, son. Gonna be on tit up. That's all my eyes can see. Victory is mine. Yeah, surprisingly, I've been laying, waiting for your next mistake. I put in work and watch my status escalate. Your cornballs get stonewalled, blackballed. I own y'all. The veteran running my plan. I'm the better man. Crazy raw, doing my job like the mob. Blazing y'all and disappearing in the fog or a mist. And chicks can't resist what I kick. They be begging for attention on some more of the deals, Nick. Word up, baby. Someone may have to get hurt up, baby. Shit is mad shady, but I got to get the gravy. Platinum respect like the force of a tech. Keep you hitting the deck, feeling heat in your chest. Banging your thoughts with the hot onslaught. A kid got shot on the spot for going where he should not. Viciously, I make history instantly. Those other lame ass loser ass niggas, they can't fuck with me. I'm doing my thing now to lamp later on.
paid in shape with some fly gators on, but now I'm grimy as they get. Mud on my pants and shirt. I bet you niggas out here know I be putting in work.
I'm gonna be on Tinder. That's all my eyes can see. Victory is mine. Yeah, surprisingly, I've been laying, waiting for your next mistake. I put in work and watch my status escalate.